Penguin Audio presents Seven for a Secret by Lindsay Fay, read by Stephen Boyer. The colored mother of New England to her infant. Thy sparkling eye is full of light, thy heart beats high with joy, and woe or care from morn till night disturbs not thee, my boy. Smile now, for o'er thy coming years a cloud of misery bends, disgrace and shame, regret and tears, till earthly being ends, whose skin reflects a darker hue than that the white man wears. And for this cause thy earthly dew of joy must change for tears, for thee from childhood's gleesome hour through all thy onward track are hard and bitter things in store, because thy skin is black. Popular abolitionist song. Prologue. On the day the worst happened to her, and by worst I mean the tragedy you die to prevent, kill to prevent, the cruelty beyond endurance, Lucy Adams was working in a flower shop, arranging scarlet and orange hothouse roses whose colors could have put a midsummer sunset to shame. How little I learned about her that day when we met. How tragically little. The details would come later. Long after I'd told her that I, Timothy Wilde, Copper Star Badge number 107 and defender of whomever I damn well pleased, would set it all right again. That I would stop at nothing to help her. And to that end, I wanted her to spin me a tale. Just tell it to me like a story, and I'll fix this. God, what hubris men can achieve after 6 months working at a job. An impossible job at that. Or maybe just one too taxing for the likes of me. I'd like to say that my brother Valentine manages better, this being a fledgling star police of New York City business. But he's the captain of Ward 8, and complicated the whole wretched affair the way a kitten complicates a ball of yarn. So no, Wilds in this case, the younger and the elder, made precious few sound decisions. I could pretend that recording Lucy Adams' story is important for posterity, justice even, but that would be humbug. Smoke obscuring a charnel house landscape. What truly matters just now to me is that a black saga resides at the back of my eyes. And the last time that happened, I wrote it all down. At 6 o'clock in the evening on February 14th, 1846, Mrs. Adams stood at a work table behind the front counter of the flower shop, peeling thorns from rose stems. St. Valentine's Day had dawned frigid and clear, but now winds churned above Manhattan, and snowflakes swooned their way to Chambers Street outside the frosted display window. The shop ought to have closed an hour previous, but still swarmed with men in swallow-tailed coats demanding artificial armfuls of summertime. Scarves flapped, watch chains whirled, acres of forced conservatory flowers disappeared out the door into the snow. Mrs. Adams hummed a tune as she worked, a melody too old for a name that drifted along the exhalations of her breath. She thought with a pleasant longing of supper, for her cook had promised to stew a pair of ducks for the family, and imaginary scents of orange rind and dried mint teased at her nose. Minutes ticked past, and still more minutes, and she began to wrap the stem of her bouquet with blood-red silk, winding it as if casting a spell. Fingers sure and length of ribbon supple as skin. It was the last time she would ever do so. The bow she tied was perfection, a soft, elegant ending. The shop owner, Mr. Timpson, a former Manchester dweller with kindly eyes and a gray, sagging complexion, save for his crimson nose, tutted when he glanced at the clock next to the yellow sprays of lilies. He just warmly thanked a trio of departing swells with maroon greatcoats and ivory trousers, and Timpson's superior blooms at last had emptied. All the day long, it had resembled the stock exchange. "I'll sweep up, dear," he told his single shop assistant, Mrs. Adams. "It'll be ghastly out there in a quarter hour, and I've only to climb the stairs to reach my supper. Get along home with you." Mrs. Adams protested that her final order for the next day wasn't quite finished.
"Sample complete. Ready to continue?"